Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal brothers on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century Never Never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to this series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast.
Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 3.6, Sidetracked, where we are discussing the book Johannes Cabal, The Necromancer. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Amber.
Hi there.
And Jess.
Hello.
Chapter 6. The carnival makes a wrong turn into abandoned territory. Cabal tries to find out where they are and ends up finding a lost soul. Chapter 6, in which Cabal makes an unplanned stop and talks about the war.
Absolutely. Right off the bat, I just have to point out, love the first sentence. So the carnival moved on and moved on, and it left a thin line of misery and discord behind it at town after town. That, to me, once again, demonstration of how awesome a writer JLH is. Like, just the fact, like, the repetition in that line alone was just, it's just lovely. Mm. It's like a piece of chocolate in the mouth, you know? Like, it's just, from a writing standpoint.
It reminded me of the description of the train as well, because the train was painted black with that red thin line that was painted along the side of it.
Mm.
Blood red line.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me.
Ooh.
So Carnival is making its way across the land, and Cabal is doing some reflecting. He figures there's plenty of time to get the 100 souls.
Yes. And he reflects. He says, then he would have his soul back. I thought this was a really nice tie-in back to the central motive. Amidst the lengthy descriptions and scenic side stories, all the tangents we've been on, right? Like, we've met so many different characters, gone through so many different sort of side stories.
Yeah.
And here he brings it back to the main line, which I think, you know, like you were saying about that sort of the railroad, if you want to use that metaphor, it's like, okay, now we've been off that tangent, now we're coming back to the main line.
Mm-hmm.
So we once again are reminded of sort of the motives behind things. It's like, yes, he's here to get his soul back. As fun as that meandering was, as distracting as the carnival can be, this is the reason we're here.
So we can spit in Satan's eye.
Yeah, get back his pride.
Absolutely.
And it says too, like, we've jumped forward a couple of towns now since the last chapter. And yeah, like, so far, as said, they're all just as shitty as the next, so.
No need to tarry. No
yeah, just move along. Same show, different pony.
Same town, different, yeah.
Yeah.
Different pile?
Different yes. pile, yeah.
And so it's funny because in describing the different towns that he's been at, I like the word venal. This is another one of the words I looked at. So providing they stayed on schedule and providing the other communities they visited were as base and venal as Murty, Pembersley, Newtown, Carnforth Green, and a bunch of others. So venal, I had to look this up, showing or motivated by susceptibility to bribery, corrupt. So he's basically like one corrupt town after another. Here we go.
Thanks, humanity.
Yes.
Yep.
Then the train shudders to a halt in the middle of nowhere.
Sound effects.
Thank you. This is my audition for Critical Role.
Right. Bones comes and lets Cabal know that they're on the wrong line, likely the work of some kids or Satan's avatars messing with the plates.
So real quick, Rare Americans is a band, and they've got this song called Brittle Bones Nikki, and they've got Brittle Bones Nikki 2, which is a lot more like carnival themed, and it's about this kid like going through heaven and hell and death and like blah, blah, blah. But in the second one, they've got, like, this guy, Mr. Bones, in it. And it's just who I imagine now. It's just this, like, yeah, like, skeleton in a top hat jumping around. Which, you know, technically, you know, the Mr. Bones in this book has a thin layer of skin over all that, too. But, yeah, it's just, like, just jumping around like, hey, hey, hey.
Totally. And it's interesting, like, this again for me shows a really good sort of writing, like the ability to write different characters and have that different sort of the aspects to it, like when they're talking, like, of course Bones comes up and says, "Bad news, boss, we're on the wrong line." "Really?" said Cabal, looking at the healthy growth of weeds. "You do surprise me." "It's true," replied Bones. "Ba ba 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 ba. It's a definite done deal." And so it's interesting. I think you hear this more in the audiobook, and like to a certain degree, the narrator sort of assists on that front. But there's a vast speech difference. Like there's a vast difference in speech patterns where like, to me, the way that it's written, like, "Really, you do surprise me." You know, like that's very sort of, that to me is British upper class gentleman, you know, "Oh, really, you do surprise me," you know, sort of. Whereas like, "Yeah, it's a done deal, boss," you know? So it's like, it's like you can feel the different characters to a certain degree. Yeah,
I mean, there's obviously all authors are going to have to go through a variety of characters in every single story, but JLH really jumps between the point of view quite quickly, you know, between one sentence and the next. You're a suddenly different person, you know, and he does do a really good job of making them all their own distinct person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So I dig that. Dig it, dig it, dig it.
So, you know, Cabal goes to solve this problem by first attempting to climb on top of the train to look around, which just already seems like you'd be able to tell from the ground that that's not going to work.
Well, he does like, see a house, so...
Well, he does, but, like, even when he's on top of that train, though, he's like, "I'm not going to undignify myself by jumping and looking around," but I'm like, you already climbed on top of a train, man. Like, when you could tell that, like, the edges and the trees and things were so tall anyways.
Yeah, the quote was, "Discarding the options of jumping up and down or standing on tiptoes is both pointless and damaging to his dignity." I wrote my response to this so beneath him. Yeah.
Cabal would never.
But, like, something that's been overgrown that long, like, especially when it talks, like, a little later, I think there was something to quote about, the station. And I'm kind of jumping ahead here a little bit, but yet there was a sense of order gently giving way to entropy. Cabal had learned a lot about human nature over the past weeks, blah, 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 blah. So that descriptor of order gently giving way to entropy, it reminded me a lot of, like, when I went to Mozambique at one point, I think about 10 years ago. 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Anyway, and like I saw this old building that was slowly being overtaken, like it had been built during sort of the colonial period. And so eventually left to rot and sort of that overgrowth of bush, right? And just the nature taking over what was once a structure in there. So that was sort of the visual image I had. So given that, like with the amount of destitution, I don't know if you really could see a lot from the bottom, like from the ground, right? So not that we're going to stand on tippy toes, because, you know, that's way
of course not us. Crazy.
But yes.
So yeah, so Cabal starts working his way towards that house, as we find out is a station, and starts getting this like horrible sense of dread on the journey there, just filled with like fear and apprehension and whatnot, and like feels so lonely and isolated in ways he's never, or at least infrequently, has felt.
Totally. Yeah, doom mixed with loss, sudden nameless longing. But he continues to steady himself, and he pushes on.
Right. It took him a bit to figure out that it was fear that he was feeling.
Oh, yes.
Yes, the analysis of fear, he usually has something to be afraid of, whereas in this case, he had nothing to be afraid of. He was confused by it. But I like the quote, "things of his creation that had gotten out of the laboratory or the oubliettes or once out of the furnace and had hung around the house in the shadows waiting for an opportunity to jump on him and kill him." These things he's afraid of reasons that are obvious.
Good reasons. And he said, too, like he didn't believe that it was kids messing with the train line. He believed that it was an enforcer of Satan come to ruin their plot, you know?
Well, you know.
So, like, there's already, like, often. Well, right? So there's already maybe a little bit of apprehension in that way. Like, maybe one of Satan's men is, like, just waiting to, you know, put a fork in the road or the back of your head or neck or whatever. Like, but even then he like determines like it's not from himself, right? It's like the presence of this place is making him, he's like, "Oh, well, never mind then. This has nothing to do with me. It's fine."
Yeah.
It's like, I'd be more afraid then.
Yeah. No, and I thought this was interesting too in terms of like his emotional intelligence, right? Like he's able to
compartmentalize.
Discern between, okay, what is my feeling versus an external feeling or an external influence. Like, it, does this belong to me?
Yeah, it takes him a moment, but he does end up being like, no, I'm good, actually.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit like just, you know, a clinical in a way that most of us can't do, but it's very cabal, you know, that whole analytical thing again, too, where he's just like totally willing to separate himself from the rest of humanity. He's like, no, I'm not like this, you know, plebeians where they're going to be afraid.
Right.
If so I don't have a good reason, I'm not doing it.
Is that like an emotional detachment, do you think? Like,
yeah, that's just what I'm thinking it is. Yeah. Is that, yeah, like he's just a little bit, he's already one step removed. So it's not so hard to remove it again on purpose, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I think he's just, he's got such a strong will as well. I think that yeah, part too, of you it know, is
just constant stubbornness.
So he does tell himself to snap out of it on a sure determination and continues walking towards the building. And he still experiences, as you said, more mm-hmm. more feelings of agony, of loss and emotions. But he still continues to tell himself to keep walking and to control mm-hmm. himself.
Pull yourself together, man.
Yeah, and when he gets to the station, this is where I was talking about the sense of order gently giving way to entropy. I like the part. Cabal had learned a lot about human nature over the past few weeks and knew full well that where there are boys and unattended glass, there was also likely to be some property damage in the near future. So I like how, you know, when we start talking about the petty vandalism perpetuated by the boys, one such had particularly infuriated him and was now a permanent fixture in the House of Medical Monstrosities. I put hashtag revenge.
Come get ya.
He is ruthless.
Yeah. Right? Like, watch it. You'll become one of my exhibits.
Yeah, if you don't. Legit.
You stop. I wish I had that ability, you know, like some jerk tossing rocks at my windows or, you know, boys up to, or well, I should say vagabonds up to no good.
Vagabonds.
I like that.
I'd love to get some revenge on a customer, just because. Yeah. They deserve it.
You need
a, if you've ever been a customer in your life, fuck you.
Jess needs her own house of medical monstrosities to put people in.
I do.
So Johannes finds there's a mystery to be solved with the abandoned train station, which he cannot help but investigate further.
He says a little later on, like, that's what separates him from other scientists. Like, they just don't actually care and have a curiosity like he does. I'm like, damn, dude, like, their whole point is to, like, research. And he's like, no, they stop themselves short. I'm the one who actually cares about the mystery. Mm-hmm. It was very funny. Oh, he's just like, even other scientists with whom he is attempting to be. Like, you know, he's not a magician. He's not magical. He is a scientist. But even then, he's like, well, not like scientists, because they're boring and they stop way before their potential. Like,
that's funny.
Yeah. But he's like, but me, I actually care and I'm going to figure this out. Like, all right. Okay.
Absolutely. I like how Cabal assesses the feeling and it becomes simply a sensation. Tanzan, I was thinking about you the other day when I reread this. And, like, in terms of, this is how Tanzan got me to be able to eat hot, spicy things, is reframing it as, it's not pain, it's just a different kind of sensation. Which I thought was very insightful, and has actually helped me eat peppers, so, you know.
Well, there you go.
There you go, so.
Mind over matter.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But, yeah, again, Cabal can just kind of compartmentalize that.
Yep.
Right.
Psychology.
It's psychology.
She fooled you, Amber. Don't be a slave to your emotions.
She also feeds me chocolate when she needs something. Wait a minute.
Chocolate covered peppers. Yeah. Start slow and build up.
So he enters the waiting room, picks up a newspaper projecting that the war would be over by Christmas.
A very old newspaper.
Yes. And I thought this was great insight following on the perspective of war. So he puts, as a man who dealt with life out of death, he was perhaps more appalled by war than most. And he says he'd been chased out of towns by morally superior, solid citizens who would cheerfully send their children to die in conflicts that could or should be handled diplomatically. So I thought, like, that whole part about sort of the, essentially, I think it's JLH's view on war, ultimately, mm-hmm. but, like, it's a good perspective.
Yeah. I like, though, that quip that quickly follows after, and he's like, Cabal doesn't normally kill unless he has to. Denzel and Dennis, though, that was just saving the gene pool. Doing a favor to the gene pool. I'm like, all right.
It had admittedly been a question of eugenics as well as self-defense. It was the gene pool or them.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. Good. It's like he takes us into a really dark sort of space. You know, even in the last chapter with Ted and Rachel, it's like, takes us into dark mm-hmm. places, examining some pretty serious issues like spousal abuse, war, you mm-hmm. know, like, but at the same time, here's a yeah. little light quip to keep everything
and then
fine.
Real quick, yeah. You know, like,
everything's fine.
Not too fast.
Keep yeah. calm. Carry on. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely lightens the mood.
It does. Yeah. Just in time for Cabal to settle himself in this very much abandoned station.
That stinks psychically to high heaven.
Mm-hmm. I love that line.
I did too.
It was really like, ooh.
Ooh, what does that smell like? Wait, that doesn't smell. It's psychic. Absolutely. And he introduces himself to the nothingness as a necromancer, and he's here to help. I thought of one of our conversations about the, what was it, the Exuant King? Mm-hmm. When you were saying, well, why didn't he just declare his intentions from the beginning?
He's learning.
So that's CJS. Yeah. See, he did it this time. Yeah. I'm here to help. Just learning.
Don't kill me.
Please yeah. don't misread my intentions.
I do like, though, yeah, he like fully unsettles. Like, it is like, you know, not defensive. It's just like, relax. Like, he takes a seat. He pulls out a cigar. I'm a necromancer. No big deal. Let's have a conversation. like he again, it seems like a little bit more of this act that he's sometimes capable of putting on, where he's just like, everything's totally chill. I'm the chillest guy in the room.
I love that cigar moment that he didn't smoke as a rule, but he liked the novelty of having at least one vice that he couldn't be hanged for.
Yeah.
At least one. You gotta have at least one.
So a little indulgency, even for Cabal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This will only kill me. It won't get me lynch mobbed.
Now or later.
This will only give me cancer. It won't have me burning at a stake, you know? Like, yeah.
If you're gonna go.
Right?
So the soldier manifests and asks for a light. Soldier states he's been waiting for what seems like forever for the tea counter to open so we could buy matches. Cabal kindly tells him that the counter is closed permanently and asks him to sit with them. Could you imagine being a smoker and having to wait that long for a light?
That sounds painful.
Well, I'm surprised, you know, he's waiting for them to open. At a certain point, I would just go behind the counter and get my own light. I think, like, he's a very honorable soldier, because I think, you know, at a certain point, if I haven't seen an employee in a while and I'm waiting for them to open, I'd be like, all right.
Well, honorable, except we find out later that he steals.
Well,
he takes guns from.
You know. But not matches from
right
stores.
He won't steal matches from stores, but he'll bring a gun into the town.
You know,
from his vanquished
priorities.
Enemies. Yes,
priorities.
Right. So it's interesting. He also notices the way that the light appears on the buttons. He notices Cabal notes that the uniform buttons don't catch the light, and it was as if Cabal were looking at him through a light mist. So this is sort of our first inkling, like, if you didn't figure it out by now, that this is obviously a ghost. And I thought just the way that he presented that visual, like, was very creative, right? So as we see the soldier continue on, or his interactions, Cabal's interactions with the soldier, I never have been able to say the word soldier. Shoulder is what I used to always say. Anyway. The soldier chooses to sit in the chair that was drawn. So this, I thought, was interesting. It's like a tiny little detail, but I think it's a detail I didn't catch in my first reading of when I first read this, which was, yeah, he can't move inanimate objects. Of course, he's not going to pick the chair that's
still there. Yep.
You know?
Mm.
So here we get into the ghost trope.
Well, and I was surprised just how gentle Cabal is when he starts questioning him. He's very, just kind to this soldier. At least for a while.
I was going to say, I was like, for me, it didn't seem, I mean, not necessarily unkind, but Cabal never once gave him a chance to believe or ever. Like, Cabal was instantly like, no, they're closed and they're closed permanently. Like, and then he says, he's like, oh, do you think the war will be closed by Christmas? And Cabal goes, it wasn't.
Right?
Like, I feel like it wasn't necessarily so mean off the bat, but he was never mincing his words at all. Like,
very
was,
matter of fact.
Totally. Like, he was very much like, whether or not the ghost picks up on it, Cabal was very honest, brutally honest, really. Like,
I didn't see it like that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and it wasn't. Like, I thought that was a really, will the war be over? It wasn't. You know, it's like the soldier doesn't even clue into the tense change. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And even, like, there was another part, too, where the soldier was like, what do you mean it's closed permanently? Like, loads of people use it. And Cabal's like, are you sure? I don't see anyone. It's like, I don't know. Like, I didn't see it as maliciously mean, but still like brutally honest, you know?
Okay.
Willing to listen, though. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Like, he does want to engage with the, you know, he ultimately does want to help.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's not like a ghostbuster here to exterminate, you know? No. Like, he was.
In terms of how he handles many other people, this was very gentle and kind of him.
Yeah.
Because he could have just right off the bat been like.
But would he have gotten it, though? Like, would. So, like, we see, as we go through, like, the commanding officer was telling him something in his dreams, right? Mm-hmm. And so this. Trying to tell him something. And you see Cabal essentially doing the exact same thing with saying, like, no, it wasn't. The war was not over. You know, past tense, buddy. And, like, yes, he's there to help, but he's also very clear in, like, you obviously.
Time to move on. Let's go.
You haven't figured this out so far. Others have tried to tell you this, and you're not cluing in. So I'm going to be very matter of fact to the point, but at the same time. Try to be gentle to gain your trust. Try to be gentle to sort of understand the situation.
He's not here for a fight.
Totally.
But yeah. And so, in Cabal is, he's very pressing the issue. He's like, oh, you've been dreaming? Like, tell me about your dreams. Like, what's the issue? And even when the soldier's hesitant, Cabal's like, no, like, let's work through this together. Like, what is plaguing you? What are you dreaming about? What's this? And kind of forcing the soldier to, like, open up a little bit and be like, well, you know, I'm looking for these people. I was having this conversation with my commanding officer. Like, just a little bit, like, push. Like, let's go, buddy. Like, it's been long enough. Time to face your fears now.
Kind of reminds me of a good psychology session. Yeah, that's it. You know, it's like, Cabal's trying to be the
therapist.
The therapist here. Yeah. And, And the soldier talks of dear Katie, his lass. Mm-hmm. And interesting, this is where Cabal talks, like he introduces Sherlock Holmes and the scientific method of resolving the chaos that crime generates. So once again, JLH showing off his vast literary knowledge, pulling in a little bit of Conan Doyle here.
Yeah. Well, I was a little bit surprised that he actually just outright mentions Sherlock
Holmes, right?
Instead of making some sort of
a detective
really
and a doctor.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. But I like, too, that it was Sherlock of all things, because you've got Sherlock, the detective, and Watson, who was a returned army soldier, right, who ended up coming up with, teaming up with Sherlock in their adventures. You know, there was like a little bit of a parallel going on between this with Cabal and the soldier, Sherlock and Watson. I was just like, just slightly like, oh, Watson was injured from the war and couldn't return. This guy's very injured and can't return.
Or returned and is now very injured.
You know.
All of the above.
But yeah, so it was very I think another reason for the, not metaphor, but association.
Condescension?
That's the word. Last episode.
Refer back.
Copy and paste it in the last one.
Yes, and apart from the Holmes stories, Arthur Conan Doyle also wrote Tales of Horror, The Bizarre, says Cabal. Some ghost stories, too. And so.
Which the soldier does not like instantly.
Right? Go figure. Mm-hmm. Oh, truth hurts. Truth totally. Hurts. And so I like where, like, Cabal starts, where he outlines the different types of ghosts. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, this is where, Jess, you need to create, like, a different types of vampire abilities and superpowers.
According to
Jess, IMO. But yeah.
Type one.
So in terms of the types of ghosts, we've got recordings of dramatic, usually traumatic events. Number two is a particularly powerful personality who can distort things around a place of death or where it spent most of life. And third one, the lost soul who does not know that he's dead yet.
I liked that when he was describing the second type of ghost, that he does actually come and mention the Exuant Demon King reference.
I wondered about that. Yeah.
Because that's where he had injured himself.
Yeah, I wrote Cabal rubbed ruminatively at his shoulder blade and remembered a provincial theater that gossip held to be haunted. He'd been lucky to get away with only a fractured scapula. So yeah, I even wrote, like, Exuant reference? Yep. So, yay, yay, yay.
And I like, too, that he also calls that category, you cannot reason with them. They will just do. Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Personal experience? Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Right? I think we've had this.
Yeah, we
before.
Covered that.
We covered this.
Yeah.
Episode two.
Episode Wait. Two and three.
Hey! So, yes. And Cabal says he'd only ever met one of the third kind, which was the lost soul, once. and then looks pointedly at the soldier, still confused. I like this. The sheer obtuseness of the dead never fails to stagger me. I laughed at that.
Yeah. I swear he loses his patience with him.
Dumbass dead people.
Yeah.
Okay, you're still not getting this.
Can't they figure this shit out?
Right. Who, buddy?
Right.
Yeah, so he's no longer gentle with the ghost at this point. He begins to describe the soldier how he thinks he died by basically killing himself.
Yes.
Yeah, Cabal doesn't know what caused him to do it, but the soldier is a little bit prompted into telling his story of that dream with the commanding officer where he says, like, oh, I just thought it was a bad dream, you know? He was being so gentle and nice, and he's never gentle or nice, you know? So it can't be real. And Cabal's like, okay, but what did he say? And you kind of find out that, yeah, he was told that his Cadian family somehow all were gone.
Yeah.
All at one time.
All at one time, which is...
odd?
Odd. Totally, yeah. Like, how does... Yeah.
Tanzan and I have a little in-joke. It's odd. I don't like it. We had a friend at one point who was British, and I said that was like the ultimate British saying ever was, it's odd. I don't like it.
Yeah. She would say that often.
So, everything we have here. In the
So it became a little in-joke. If something's a little bit off, it's odd. I don't like it.
Sounds like a ball.
That's my sad excuse of a British accent, if anybody's checking on that.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. So Cabal searches for a form to sign because the soldier explains that... Sorry, did I jump ahead?
No.
The soldier explains the commanding officer's assertions that his family and Katie were dead. And Cabal notes that they're all dead. It's odd. And he repeats that he can free the soldier. At the same time, checks his
pockets
to see if there is a form to sign.
And I was so disappointed in Cabal with this after he's gone through this whole chapter of just being like, even Tanzan said, even if I'm saying he's brutally honest, he was as soft as we've seen him, you know? And for me, who's completely forgotten this entire book, I was like, Cabal, you stupid motherfucker, I hate you. And I'd had the thought beforehand because Cabal had just been like, bitching at Horse, like, you're bad at being evil, right? So I was like, okay, fine, Cabal, lean into it, I guess.
You're talking about virtue tainting, yeah, and now like, you geez. Have none.
Like, I guess you're upholding it, but I don't like it, but, you know.
Well, but if I don't release him, this was the quote, if I don't release him, staying here is a sort of damnation anyway, Cabal reasons. What difference does it make if he serves it out in hell or a rural station? I laughed at that. I've been to a few rural train stations, I can admit that. Yeah.
Right.
Or like those Milk Run airport stops, like in the middle of nowhere. Like
the worst is the Greyhound. And it was still a thing.
The defunct Greyhound, yes.
The Milk Run there, every little tiny town.
Whoa. But here's where I think Cabal is redeemed. He sees hope remaining in the soldier when the soldier talks about being able to potentially reconnect with his beloved lass, Katie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like that hope in the eyes. Mm-hmm. Do we really want to damn the soldier? Do we?
So he makes uses powerful
Pithelia?
Cthulhu?
Pithian.
I googled it and it's not real.
Okay.
So you can say it however you want.
Pithian. Powerful Pithian
sigils.
Now I can't say sigils. Go figure.
So that's funny.
Cabal uses powerful
Pithian sigils. I think you should say that at least 5 times. Powerful I can't even know.
Cabal uses a powerful Pithian sigils.
Boom.
And creates a portal out of the door for the soldier and tells him to walk through.
Cabal convinces him to attempt to step out into the light.
Hmm. Yes.
Says that he has a good chance of meeting Katie if he does.
Okay, can we just laugh about the Pithians for a second and how they self-destructed as a people? Yeah. So the quote is, in an hallucinogenic haze, they had first assured themselves that they were great sorcerers and then demonstrated their extraordinary abilities by levitating en masse from a high place. Perhaps they should have chosen a low place to start with. Like, it's yeah.
That's a great moment, that one. I like the
Pithians.
Fuck.
We should have like a glossary of all the words we can't pronounce on this podcast.
We could have a full podcast just based on that.
Pithians.
Pithians.
Condescending. So, yes.
So the train gets on the right track at the junction. Cabal stops to bribe the signalman, who describes what actually happened at what Wellstone Halt.
Yes, during the troop and equipment movement, a munitions car caught on fire and blew up right in front of the town, killing all of them instantly.
Yeah. So why the commanding officer was so gentle with him, because his whole family has...
literally gone boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That war, sort of emphasizes more the tragedy of war, because it was a munitions train that did the deed.
Totally. And so after finding out what the backstory of Wollstone Halt was all about and why the soldier was getting this bad news, Cabal returns to Horst in the office. I liked Horst's response to him. This is, again, more brotherly love. What acts of petty despicability have you wrought this day? And Cabal says, you might be surprised.
Yeah, I think this is the first time that we see real growth for Cabal, for Johannes.
Yeah.
I think that's beyond... previous to this, he's been like, how do I get victims? How do I get victims? How do I get victims? And this is the first time he's thought, how do I save this person?
Mm. So it's been self-serving for the most part, yeah. But now it's sort of a shift into, we had a lost soul and we needed to help.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. And so the next bit that we see is the memo from Dr. Ost, director of Bridgester Asylum. Security breach notice, lost almost 36 individuals into the community somewhat earlier than planned. I actually laughed out loud to that.
The whole letter is just hilarious. It's very funny.
It's a good spin on what actually probably happened as well. Like, you can tell that the director's being a little bit, damage control, essentially, yes. From the escape of the inmates. And essentially, this is where we learn that Rufus Maleficarus is on the loose.
Yes.
Bum, bum, bum.
I like the quote there. Rufus Maleficarus has sorely disappointed me personally. I thought he was making quite a good recovery from what the previous director was unhelpful referred to as a soul-searing, sanity-dissolving, profoundly malevolent appetite for power and revenge. As it happens, I think the finger painting lessons were going very well. At least up until Rufus used the paint to create a summoning circle and then rode out of here on the back of an obliging hound of Tyndalos.
Oh. It's all going well until shit hit the fan, essentially. That's what that means, yes. Quite disappointing. Quite.
Quite, right. All right. This concludes our episode 3.6, Sidetracked. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling, and remember, reanimation is trending.